Good
My name is
stuff.
Frank Summerjee. I'm with Trustworthy Computing at Microsoft, and I have four experts on my panel here that will just, you know, wow you. They have before in previous years. I'll introduce them and let them give you a little bit of background about themselves so you have a little insight on what's going on. Along the session, I will take questions. We'll try to get through a bunch of different topics, primarily the one that we talked about, which is the crossover between BYOD and hacktivism. I'm sure none of you care about that, right? So let's start. Andy.
Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me? Hello?
Mic's not on.
Mic's
on. Oh, he's working on it.
Okay. How's that?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
No. We're not on.
No?
Okay. I'll use this one. Good afternoon, everybody. Nice to see you all. My name is Andy Malone. I'm from Scotland, not England, sorry. I'm an MVP in enterprise security, like these people here. I'm also an MCT for 17 years. God, has it been that long? I teach security infrastructure. I do consulting. My kind of favored areas of security, I suppose, are forensics, and also social network security as well, social networking. And I'm doing a session tomorrow afternoon on bring your own device security.
Nice pitch there, Andy. Hussein?
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Hussein Shekarti. I'm from Sweden, or actually I live in Sweden, originally from Iraq. A technical guy with developer background. So I've been writing software for a good while and then switching over to the technical side, the dark side. What do I do? Well, security assessments, building system, tearing it down, technically penetration testing, everything that you can imagine regarding security. So,
busy guy. Hmm? All right, Paula.
Hi, everybody. My name is Paula Januszkiewicz. I am from Poland, and I'm also an MVP on enterprise security. I'm a trainer for 8 years, and I work as a penetration tester. So I'm more on the bad side rather than on the good side, testing out the systems, infrastructures, and applications. And yeah, that's basically my background. As many people here, I do have access to a source code of Windows, like everybody here that is sitting. So yeah, that's basically it.
And last, Marcus.
Yeah, last, always last. My name is Marcus Murray. I am the security team manager of a security team called TruSec. People like Hassan, for example, is in that team. We do a lot of reverse engineering, penetration testing, security hardening, incident response, stuff like that. So running the team and being part of some of the work gives me a very good overview of what's going on in the world, in the real world. So I think that's what I usually can bring to the table. I get to see the big picture and I get to see the deep down stuff. And I can tie them together. I'm also MVP, MCT, all that stuff too.
Thank you, Marcus. And he does other sessions too. I think right after this one, right?
Yes. Yeah. If you don't have the energy, you don't want to rise up. You can just sit tight.
Just stay put.
On the session 30 minutes after.
All right. So, you know, everybody here is anxiously waiting to hear your expertise, your knowledge, your wisdom. So let's share some of that. Maybe we can talk a little bit about bringing devices to an organization. There are so many different flavors of equipment that can be brought. I mean, I'd like to think everybody brings their Windows phone and their future Windows pad to their offices, but the reality is there's other equipment. If I went down, starting with Marcus, because I didn't start with you, what's your opinion? What are the benefits? What are the issues that most organizations have to deal with when it comes to security risks?
Well, I think it's a really big challenge. And the reason is that I don't think you can stop this. I mean, Microsoft called it consumerization, like bring your own devices, the way of the future. I do like it from a user perspective, but I know for a fact, working in security, that if you cannot secure the entire chain, like if it's a client-server environment, and you don't have control over the clients, it is a huge, paramount challenge to make that a complete secure transaction. I mean, I work with banks and stuff. They have had that challenge for years. And trust me, money gets stolen from banks via the clients. And they invest a lot of money in, you know, client security.
But aren't all the handheld devices secure? I've never seen anything, big news article about, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but.
No, it's a very good question. I'll tell you that. There are some things that are actually better than the common laptop desktop we're used to in the model. For example, whatever you think about it, I mean, the fact that you have, when you are producing software, there is some people checking it out and authorizing it before you can get it on. And whenever it gets like compromised or they discover there are vulnerabilities or ill will in it, they will take it off the marketplace or whatever it's called. So that is actually a good side. It's easier for me to run my custom code on your computer than it is for me to run custom code on your device, like a mobile device. On the other hand, they have a sandboxing model that is pretty strong, and that is the enabler for all this. And the problem with that is you cannot have antivirus inspecting an entire Windows Phone, iPhone, or Android, because they don't have access to the entire system. In fact, if I have zero-day exploits that can take me down to the lower layers of the operating system in that device, it's very hard to get rid of me. And I can even, in many cases, survive updates of that operating system. I mean, we have exploit codes and stuff that does that as proof of concept, so we work with this. Also, it's not in the papers, but I have three people in my team working full-time with mobile devices only, reverse engineering, researching, hardening, stuff like that.
Paul, you're shaking your head. You agree?
Yeah, totally agree. I'm a fan of solution in which, in the security chain Marcus mentioned, users should be like totally cut off. We should not take them into consideration. If they're causing a problem, and they will cause the problem, whatever happens, because they are just human, we should not take them into consideration. We should not trust them as the part of this chain. So let's create the technology that will totally help out ourselves to build up the solution that the user cannot destroy. So whatever it is, it may be file classification infrastructure, whatever it is, so that we are actually not exposed to vulnerabilities that is a human vulnerability here.
Mm-hmm. Hussein, I saw you also were shaking your head earlier.
Yeah, I very much agree with the other guys here. And
No, you need to disagree.
No,
I can disagree with Paula if you want me to.
The thing is that you really need to be very careful about looking at the entire chain. Security is something about the end-to-end situation, the end-to-end connection between the client and the server on the other side, or the data stored somewhere else. So you really need to look at all aspects of where, how the data is leaving the client, where it's been transported, how it's ending up in an application, what's happening there, and so on. And bringing that today to the discussion of bringing your own device, I mean, we're basically letting people use untrusted devices to handle our data on them. We don't know what's going to happen with that. We don't know how they are stored, how secure is that, who else is actually having access to that, and so on. So even though we use sandboxing technologies and modern mobile devices, we still have that problem. We cannot guarantee that's anybody else other than the user. I mean, take a look at the example. I have an iPhone or iPad or whatever, and then go synchronizing my mailbox with the company email server or something like that, or I'm using applications brought to me by my company or organization. Then the day I quit, I may choose to keep continuing or keeping the device as my own, and then just transferring all those properties to my device in terms of I'm not an employee anymore. So do we really bother about that? Are we really aware about that, this kind of situation? There are really many, many different type of aspects we need to start looking at.
So what happens, Andy, and maybe I'll let you talk about this. Your device drops, glass breaks, you send it in for servicing. It's already on the domain.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of remote wipe options that you can implement. There are a number of, there's some great third-party companies out there that do it. I mean, for me, there are two potential ways to deploy it. You either deploy it through the remote access type solution, where maybe a technology like direct access or something like that. The only issue with that I have is you're exposing your corporate documentation, the documents, your work, to the potential local machine, so potentially people could steal data from you. I tend to prefer the VDI type solution. VDI works on any kind of device. It totally isolates your physical environment, so the user's physical environment with a virtual environment. So that whole kind of layer of cut, copy, paste is gone. Also, you can store data centrally much easier, and there's some great solutions, even in as a standalone product, Windows Server now with Hyper-V and remote desktop services. I mean, as a basic solution, it works well.
All right, so you bring your hardware to work.
Yeah.
Now, you want to communicate with your friends, right? So you're going to put all the social apps on it, and you're going to start communicating and maybe sharing some stuff. So how does the marriage of bring your own device and social networking play together?
I mean, for me, I would say probably, I think before you start deploying devices out into the infrastructure, you need to kind of address your security policy first and foremost. You need to also plan for that deployment. And again, if you have a security policy, the chances are it's going to be out of date. Because bring your own device is moving along so quickly, you need to kind of readdress those points from my
Marcus,
point.
You were going to state, make...
Oh, man, I don't even remember he started to talk. So, I mean, bringing your own device, the whole thing, I mean, if you look, you're checking your email on your cell phone, right? I mean, if you're nodding your head, we can prove that you're lying in Hassan's wireless session tomorrow. I mean, he's capturing passwords. And he's not going to give them away. He's just going to show like small increments of
already managed to get a credit card.
Yeah. The only reason we took that card was because we want to have a nice dinner tonight. So thank you.
So bringing your device, but again, the social network element. How I mean, as a user, yeah. I want it. But yeah. As a corporation, do you want that?
Yes, I think there's goods and bads. And I disagree with Paula thinking of the users as a problem. The users are the enabler and the reason we exist. I think we should do everything we can to satisfy the users with the technology. That's why it's there. But we have to face up to the challenges. So I think we need to realize that people will bring their own devices. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is driven from CEO level. They bring in their new, I can't even say the word of the device, it's very popular, bigger than a phone, stuff like that. But I mean, they bring them in and they say, I need my email on this. And 1 month later, they say, I need presentations on this. This happens. I mean, we do a lot of reviews on companies who want to do that, and they're trying to stop it. They can't stop it. And when the CEO has it, senior management's going to want it too, and after a while, everybody's going to have it. So that is the way of the future. We need to handle it. And what I think would be a way forward, the solution that we'd recommend today, is try to implement management solutions and made them allow you to monitor and manage their devices. Like, if you want to access the network this and that way, you will have to be monitored. Otherwise, you cannot do it over your phone. I mean, you can use your phone for other nice things, but if you want to access this kind of data, it needs to be configured like this, and we are going to configure it for you. So mobile device management, that is something that we will all talk about at least a few years from now. Mm-hmm. Some people do it already. But that is the way of the future. We're going to have to accept that people will bring mobile devices. And the world is changing in a way that we can't even imagine, I think.
Paula, so let me put another twist on it. What about tethering that device in a corporation? What about wireless access?
That's an interesting question. So first of all, I didn't say that the users are problematic.
I'm sorry, I thought you said that.
No, I didn't.
I apologize.
Okay, you accept it.
I guess the admins are.
Yeah. So I didn't say that they are a problem. I think that...
Am I going to have to split the two of you up?
What are you doing tonight, by the way?
Oh. They're so cute.
Sorry, Paula.
Yeah, okay. So they're not problematic, but I don't think that they should be considered as the element that we should trust. So they are like vulnerable by design. So sorry to say it, but that's why we do have all the social engineering things, right? So you may talk to an admin and that's fine. He won't accept your offer, but you might talk to somebody else and this person is vulnerable. And this is the same infrastructure we are working on. So what I said, is that I'm a huge fan of technologies that are actually, as I said, cutting off the user from this chain, which means that whatever the users are, whoever they are, whatever they're going to do, the technology is going to help us out. So all the solutions, all the automation that is happening that is helping out not to trust them.
And it's also, I mean, technology is moving so fast. Security is often the second
things
thing.
Things are changing, yeah.
You know, they get this new device out there, then they think, oh, right, how are we going to secure it?
Just to have a comment on that, I believe that is a combination of about policies, awareness, and technology. Technology alone won't help us. Mm-hmm. We can implement whatever we would like to. I mean, the user will still be able to have take your camera and just have a copy of your screen and send it to have a competitor or something else.
This can happen.
So we need to have awareness. We need to tell people what's right and what's wrong. We need to enlighten them. How should I act? How should I do if I receive this type of an email, this type of a system? When I access the data there, where should it end up, and so on?
I was just going to mention just one thing about your social networking comment.
Yes.
I did a project last year with the U.S. military, U.S. Army in Europe, and we designed a training course. And initially, the Navy went through a process where they said, "Okay, we're going to allow our users to use Facebook." Twitter. You can't. It's evolution. It's not revolution. It's evolutionary. And the Army said, no, we're not going to do that. But then they changed their mind. They realized that they physically couldn't stop it. So you physically can't stop it. It's an evolutionary process. So you need to be able to not control it, because the Army don't do that. They manage it. And you manage it through policy.
Let me segue along that line. All right, so you allow that. How about this? Jailbreaking. Mm-hmm. So how many people here have jailbroken broken equipment?
They're going to admit it, right?
So as a corporate policy, that's, no offense, probably a violation already. Yeah. Let's put that aside. You have to accept it. What are you going to do? Anybody?
Well,
of course, Marcus. Come on.
Yeah.
I can shut up if you want.
No, please. And by the way, we'll start taking questions. The mic's down the center. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the three aisles over there.
Jailbreaking is a big problem, but there is a bigger problem. 2/3 of every Android device does not have the latest version of the software. So they have known vulnerabilities in their software today. Apple doesn't even give out the statistics, so we don't even know. And many people, they don't want to update it because they like it the way it is. When we talk about consumers. So I think that is a large, bigger discussion than jailbreaking, because jailbreaking, you do it intentionally. I mean, this is a decision you make. You know that you're doing something wrong if you're jailbreaking your phone and you're still using it for office applications. But if you just don't understand the concept of patching your phone, that's a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm. Or if it is basically impossible to patch it because the vendor is not supporting that brand anymore or that version anymore. So you're ending up in nowhere. I mean, I would like to have the latest version of whatever my operating system on the phone is, but I'm not allowed to do that.
Exactly.
So I go jailbreaking it because then I can install a customized ROM on it, and then it's going with the latest version again.
All right, so I hear the problem, but you see, what, 400 or 500 of my friends here want to know, what do we do to protect our networks? What do we do? See, all my friends here want to know.
Mm. Take somebody else and I'll answer later.
Well, that's a hard one. That's a very, very...
There was a question.
All right, we'll take in a second here. Yeah. Come on, Paula.
It's really a very, very hard one. I mean, you're supposed to tell people, we're going back then to telling them what's right and what's wrong and how to act. And if it's not possible to upgrade that OS version on that device, then we need to supply another one for them, or we need to make it possible that they can still run the latest applications and that the applications we are actually enforcing on our infrastructure and so on.
It's not part of the company policy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was answered, huh?
Yep.
You see, I told you, I'll ask the right question. I already told you I was going to ask a question. All right, you know, so let's move on. I think that unless you guys want to beat this horse a little bit more, I think maybe let's shift gears. We started talking about social engineering. Social engineering.
Social network.
Social networking. One of the things that I have actually over the years done is I've worked with education programs to teach about cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a new crossroads occurring now. I mean, look at privacy policies that all different vendors are introducing. Facebook is making a change. Yep. Yeah. I know my kids, I'm worried. Again, my friends here and I want to know, what should we do? Any of you? Andy, let's start with you.
Education every time, I would say. I mean, it's no longer trendy. I mean, it's now known that Facebook, the numbers are starting to tail off. So now what does that mean? Does it mean that we're becoming a little more savvy to the security aspect of it? I mean, for example, that Facebook are now talking about bringing down the age level to below 12. And that's just, and personally as a parent, that is just unacceptable for me. And there are many other social networks, and we've seen, you know, cases, horrible cases of abuse that have come out. I mean, you'll, being in the States, you'll know about the Jesse Slaughter case. If you don't, I'll tell you in a moment. And that's caused considerable amount of, you know, that's rippled throughout the world. And also, internet trolling as well has been an awful take up of that. And it's great to see that the social networks are now actually naming and shaming and prosecuting internet trolls. So hopefully that's going to be an area that's stopped.
Hussein?
I think many users are actually not bothering about knowing, or that they believe that they don't need to know anything about privacy policies or things, whatever Facebook or Twitter or Microsoft or Google actually putting up front, they basically don't bother about reading that, understanding that, and how is that going to affect me as a user, and so on. Because they want to interactive communication with their, friends and colleagues and so on. And the only thing that matters, I would like to have access to that group or that list. So I think we have a very good competition here between what's actually possible and what people really would like to have.
Paula?
Yeah, I totally agree with Hussein. So we will use all these services anyway, so who cares about this policy? I know it's a little bit challenging in month of the person who does something with security, but we're going to use Facebook, we're going to use Gmail, we're going to use all these services. But the thing is, like Andy said, only with education. So this is up to you how much data you would like to publish. I never publish where I am. I really, if I have to publish any picture, then I think twice. So my Facebook wall is actually totally boring.
But Hassan always says where you are.
Yeah. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, your other peers are actually telling everybody else where you are, what are you doing. Okay, I watch Paula, her session, and Tech Ed, and Orlando, and so on. Then it's all over again.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you picked the wrong profession. I never tell anybody where I am.
Thank you.
Like 1,000 people in the room where you are. They're twittering it.
You're the cutest person I know, Marcus.
You told me you were only saying that to me, not to everybody else.
So a little social activity
that's
here.
That's social activity, yeah.
Or, well, you know, I think education message comes across, but, I mean, again, parents out here, I'm thinking that there's still something. Maybe, how about this? Maybe we start an internet police worldwide. What do you think? Marcus?
There are so many internet polices worldwide, you wouldn't even know it. I mean, there are like military organizations in every country doing that stuff. But they don't care about kids, they care about territorial areas and stuff like that. But I want to say something regarding to the thing about the kids. I think the real police should be the parents. I think they should step up and be parents again.
Yeah.
And not just playing computer games, work, doing stuff. I mean, I have two kids, they're 6 and 9. I mean, it's my responsibility that they don't do bad stuff on Facebook. It's my responsibility to understand what they're doing when they're at their friend's house. Stuff like that. I need to talk to other parents. I need to put it on myself. I think that's the big, you can't do it to the kids. I mean, you can't tell the kids. You can educate your kids. You can learn them, teach them right from wrong. You can show them the world and explain what's good and bad. But you cannot expect the internet police to take care of your kids. Doesn't work that way. So I think that's the most important thing to understand. It's my responsibility until they're old enough to take it themselves.
I was just going to say one addition to that. I mean, all of us are parents. I mean, I can remember being a kid like all of you, and we used to play out on the streets and have fun and you know, play with our buddies. Now we're afraid to death of letting our kids go a block away. You know, we bred a generation of children. We're afraid of it. I don't know what we're afraid of.
Yeah, but we're letting afraid, them on the internet.
Yeah, we're letting them on the internet, mm-hmm. totally wide open. You know, and I heard a horror story of the other day that a parent came in and they've got an Xbox Live system and caught the kid watching porn movies. Mm. You know, so you know how it's, I mean, it's all down to parental control. You've got to be able to control it. You've got to protect your kids.
But you're European. Why is that bad? I don't get it. Scotland.
All right. So again, kind comes back. If you have a question, we can take some. I can't walk close to the mic, so you're gonna have to kind of come out a bit. Richard, Robbie.
Robbie,
yeah. Robbie, you're my new best friend. So ask away.
Hello. Most of TechCAD has been dedicated to cloud computing. How do you guys feel? What's your honest assessment of the safety of companies taking their data from their LAN environment and uploading it to the cloud?
Hey, that's my space. No. That we're going to move on to. No, all right. Actually, yeah. So cloud computing.
What could you guys offer companies that may go back to their bosses, I guess, and make this recommendation based on what they learned at TechEd?
All right, Andy, go for it.
Personally, if you did ask me this question a year ago, or a year and a half ago, and I said I'm not too sure. But actually, the more and more I work with this technology, the more and more I think it is a good idea. The only issue that I have with some of the basic services is that they don't offer encryption. They use things
corruption.
Like... Corruption. Rights management. Yeah, they use the rights management services, you know, to protect your data. I'm thinking Office 365. But there are a whole generation of companies coming out now, things like CloudFogger and a whole bunch of other companies offering you the ability to encrypt your data into the cloud. So I think... That's some really good steps forward.
Anybody else on?
Yeah,
the topic?
I think still it really depends on you need to figure out how sensitive your data is if you ever dare to put it somewhere else other than your own premise. I mean, sometimes it's not suitable. That's it. Period. Yeah. You cannot put it anywhere else. I need to have it under my control 100%. So even though I hosted it, whoever cloud is. Even though I do encrypt that, even though I do have access to my virtual VM and have defined my users and so on, the VM is still in somebody else's hands. And they can actually take a copy of it whenever it is. I don't have that kind of information. I don't have that kind of possibility to be able to monitor that.
I was going to say, I mean, the cloud is only it's one solution. It's not the only solution. And I think you need to... basically ascertain, you know, how sensitive, how important your data is, and you've got to be careful where you store it. I mean, you know, I do a lot with Office 365, and you realize that some companies, you know, they've got their own infrastructures, and it's like flogging a dead horse, and you can realize, you think, hang on a minute, that product is not right for you. You
know, Paula?
Small organizational thing. Yeah. Nobody will take your data if you do not agree on this, at least legally. Yeah. So if you agree to something, then you've got, like, whole documentation that you probably should read. So if you agree on that, then you know what is happening to your data. So,
Marcus. Marcus, are you using the cloud today?
Yes, absolutely. Sure, but doesn't mean I like it. From a security standpoint, I mean, I put stuff up there, but I realize what I'm doing. I think saying encryption is the thing is just making it way too easy. That is just part of the solution. Encryption itself doesn't give you anything. I mean, maybe it gives you, in some extent, that you cannot eavesdrop on it. I mean, there are criminal organizations out there that sell single sign-on solutions. They offer 500,000 bits encryption. Does it matter if you put your passwords in the single sign-on solution? You're giving it to them.
Yeah.
So you need to understand, if you want to do that, it has to be authorization, I mean, authentication and privacy encryption. I mean, there are a lot of things you need to put in the mix. There was something else I was going to say about this when it comes to cloud. I'm trying to remember.
So I will tell something.
Sure.
Regarding the problem that you mentioned, it's a kind of thing that people say that you just need to move your applications to the cloud, whatever it means. You take an application and you move it. But when you do this in a way exactly how it is, you will bring all the problems that were in application, the old one, to the cloud, which is a little bit worse because it's in the cloud right now. So let's say everybody can access it, or at least try. So the application should be built to be working in the cloud, and it's not the super easy process. So whenever you, let's say, have a web application to which you use your username from the domain and password to log in, and then you put it in the cloud, it's in the cloud. So who can try it? And what kind of password is that? The one that you use on LinkedIn?
I did recall the other comment on that. It's I have a large customer, a large bank. They have this policy that they only purchase cloud solutions from other or from vendors in Sweden, since it's a Swedish bank. And so they have this agreement with this guy handling their email protection solution, so every email is traversed through them, and they handle it. But they got bought by a Japanese company.
So who owns that data?
So, yeah, I mean, right now it's owned by a Japanese company. I'm not saying they shouldn't trust a Japanese company. It's way out of policy. They have all these controls. I mean, it's a process of just taking it away from there to someplace else. Mm. So the cloud is also about losing control in the sense that you're dealing with companies. I mean, things are changing.
So if you do have questions, I will ask you to kind of step out and grab a mic. So before we take this question, I'm going to make you guys think a little bit here. My friends here want to know one takeaway from you, just before we wrap up, something that they can take home and apply, because it's a security track, right? So if you think about it while we take this next question, what's the one thing that you could teach them right now once we're done with the session? Because then they'll stay and they really want to hear that. Okay. Question in the back there.
So I have two questions. The first question is, for the large majority of businesses that are small businesses, don't cloud computing solutions offer a much better security solution and infrastructure baseline than they could afford themselves? And secondly, how do you move the access control list with the data? Thank you.
ACLs. So I guess it's the small organizations taking on cloud computing. Is it safer? And what kind of ACL policies do they have in place? Go ahead, Marcus. You seem to...
Yes,
stumped them.
I agree. We do a lot of penetration testing in different companies, and they all have the same problems. They don't patch the software. They have dependencies everywhere. They have weak passwords. They have this and that. The bar is just too low. If you go with Microsoft Azure, and I'm not saying that because I'm on a Microsoft conference, I mean, you get a managed solution. It's managed. I mean, the only thing you can really fail is having weak passwords. There will not be dependencies in Microsoft Azure. They have the fabric controller. Everything is automated. There's no domain admin that can touch your system by his own hands. So there are standards that are followed. I mean, they can get hacked too. It's not impossible. But they manage things in a different way than most companies do, because we can't afford that. And they built this a couple of years ago. We built our networks, I don't know, 20 years ago, and they have grown and grown and grown without a real design plan. We never stuck to the plan because we didn't have one. If we need a new application, we bring it in. If it has dependencies, we will accept it, because that's, we're business-oriented. Business-oriented.
But the same, just yeah, at the same time, I mean, look at how Azure has been evolved now. You can move an e-machine from your private cloud to the public cloud in just a matter of seconds or minutes. And you will actually move the problems along that path as well. If you're not patching your machines, Microsoft is not going to patch that for you, because that's your VM. It's not a managed VM where you're hosting an application on Azure platform. That's a totally different story. If you're buying that type of service, I would like to put my web app on the Azure platform. Well, the platform itself is secure. The infrastructure where Azure runs is secure. The remote management of Azure and everything, all aspects of that, is, I think, way more secure than many small enterprises or many small companies or organizations we do have. But at the same time we are pushing our own VMs to the cloud, then we're just moving the problem along to there. We're not going to get them any better just because they are on the cloud. They will still be unpatched. They will still probably be vulnerable for 0 days or whatever. I don't know.
It's getting worse.
But yeah, it is a very nice opportunity to migrate to security. Mm. While you're moving, you could put security in as one of the design features of the migration.
So maybe start enabling Windows Update, automatic updates, or monitoring at least that it's going to happen once a month or
reviewing
whatever
it is. The internals, what is inside the machines, and so on. Yeah.
Paul, Andy, any follow-up or take next question?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right. Please.
Hi. I use a little cloud service called online banking. I was just wondering, with groups like Anonymous that are hit, like recently they hit the Quebec government, they got into their intranet. I'm wondering, are we really safe, in your opinion, or they're just holding out and they're being nice to us?
So online banking. Analysts, you guys do online banking.
I read an article yesterday that said basically all the SSL certificates, or millions of SSL certificates that are out there at the moment, are just about to expire. So it's going to cause horrendous problems. So if you've all got SSL certificates, now's the time to double check them, because it's going to cause issues. It's all down to trust. Everything is trust. The security is based on trust. And if you don't trust the company, either to do the job, that's everything. But again, as Marcus said earlier, it's a combination of authentication, authorization, trust, cryptography. It's a whole bunch of things. And if you're going to do online banking with your bank, they have to prove to you that they can earn your trust.
Marcus is about to jump out of his chair. So.
Yeah, I like to talk. I don't know if you... No, I think... It feels like some people misunderstand the risks when it comes to online banking. Mm. There is an end-user agreement.
Exactly.
And they are, up until now anyways, they are pretty generous to the customers. I mean, it's not your risk. It's the bank's risk. While when that change, it's going to be a different discussion. But you need to understand, if somebody hacks into your computer and they get to your bank account, if you didn't do something really, really, really stupid that they can really, really prove, then you will get your money back. It's going to be maybe a troublesome process, but the problem is in the hands of the banks today. So I do online banking. I'm not worried, but I do read the end user agreement. So that would be my recommendation.
I think it's very well comparable to, you guys are having credit cards and so on, and you're dealing with them daily, purchasing things, and what happens if somebody skims your card, what happens if somebody knows your card number and so on. It's exactly the same situation. That the same thing, I think, applies if you read the user agreements. The same thing will probably apply for the online banking. If somebody happens to hack your computer and get hold of your account numbers or whatever, then the bank will have some kind of maybe insurance and so, to cover that. Or some kind of a policy, at least, to be able to have coverage for that.
Within a specific period of time.
Yeah, sure.
So you have to report it in time.
I was going to say, 10 years ago, Europe introduced chip and PIN cards, and it reduced credit card theft by about 75%. And I'm amazed that I still come to the U.S., and the majority of credit card transactions are still just signed.
But still, in Europe, we still have the magnetic strip on the back side of the card, and it's possible to use it. Of course, because of compatibility, because not everybody in the world do use the chip and being able to verify the PIN code and so on.
And there's also another thing. In Poland, there was a special version of ZBot, and this was some time ago. We have a bank, really popular one, many people use it, in which you need to confirm the transaction with the PIN code that you have, for example, on your mobile phone. So you get the message, and then you need to confirm it, nothing unusual. But the problem was that ZBot was actually introducing itself as this bank application. Mm-hmm. So users were installing it as the way to get access to your account. And what it was doing, it was really smart. So when the user was actually logging in, it captured the username and password, and it automatically made some transaction, read the message that was on the phone, confirm its own transaction, and this is how money went out from the accounts.
All right, we'll take next question.
What's your take on the lack of strong authentication in most cloud services?
Authentication in account services?
Yeah, in almost all cloud services, we're falling back to using usernames and passwords. Mm. If you look at Windows 8 coming up and the live integration, it may make me force my users to have a username and password on that computer rather than using a smart card.
Just for the record, he writes books about that. He's a true expert. So.
All right, so I think you answered your question. No, I'm just kidding. All right, panelists?
Well, I'm a fan of identity management and certificate-based authentication, authorization. It's really the way to do strong authentication, and that's compatible with all different type of protocols and applications we do know about today, at least. But I totally agree. The big vendors of cloud computing, they have not started looking that way. And nobody is looking that direction at all. The good thing may be that we actually start seeing a little bit more push on federation services. That could help us a little bit, because then I can decide exactly how strong authentication I would like to apply on my users before going on the cloud. But that's probably only applies to bigger enterprises who actually already have implemented strong authentication with either one-time passwords or smart cards. Or I totally agree. There is big problem with the lack of strong authentication with cloud providers.
Anybody else want to talk about that or move on?
I just think we need to understand why there is a problem. I mean, if you're a cloud provider, how can you manage sending smart cards to small organizations of 25 people and make sure that the right person get the right smart card?
Yeah.
I mean, that is the only reason it gets strong, because the right people have the ability to prove their own identity. So I think there will be third-party solutions. I think that the large vendors like Microsoft, they will have to look for partners to sell local solutions. I think that's the way of the future for them. Guys like Kent and those people will sell that, I guess.
I think
that's why it's asking.
Yeah, just to have a comment on that, I think federation is going to be the key thing here. Those third parties will offer federated services.
Yeah. So steal one account and you have everything, right?
I do my authentication at that third party, and they will give me a ticket that will qualify my access to whatever services I'm interested in.
Hi there. Are there good utilities that we can run or that you would recommend that can help us understand what our vulnerabilities are today, both from the personal computer level, from home business people, to businesses as well?
So this is a tool recommendation. Everybody wants a tool, because we like tools.
I like GFI Essential.
We'll go down the line, because everybody wants tools. Oh, okay. All right, go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, GFI Essentials. I like that one.
GFI Essentials?
MBSA.
Go and speak to them downstairs.
MBSA? Oh.
Yeah.
Microsoft
nice.
Baseline Security Analyzer. It's a good start.
Yeah, MBSA.
I'd basically say you should have a well-updated working antivirus software on your machine. You should have a personal firewall. I personally prefer the built-in personal firewall on the Windows platform. It's just doing whatever we need it to do. It's good enough to have just that one. Don't bother about any third-party personal firewalls.
I think the Microsoft Security Antivirus is really good.
Yeah,
and I think
the Security Essential.
Cherry on the desert should be to know Windows internals, because when you are fighting with something, you need to know who you are fighting with. So, for example, Windows internals tools, so sysinternals.com by Mark Rusinovich and colleagues, are working very well, because he knows the stuff and he knows how to test it out.
I have one more comment. There is one thing that you can do that some of you do, but most don't, that will give you the best security on your desktop or laptop. It's running with low privs. I mean, I have two accounts. It's pretty simple. I have a user account. I use that for checking emails, browsing the web, and I have a configuration account. That's a local admin. I use that for installing software that I trust and things like that. So, I mean, that's a fairly cheap solution, but it requires you to understand. I mean, you're all techie people, so you can run that solution. It's maybe not that easy for everybody else, because when you are browsing something and you need that ActiveX component and you need to install it, you need to really find a way to go back as an admin, make a decision, is that good or bad, and then do it. But it will limit your exposure immensely, especially when it comes to install yourself in operating systems, surviving restarts and stuff.
And what I would add on the top of it is AppLocker right now.
AppLocker?
Yes. Yeah. It's a technology to prevent running unwanted applications. But what is the benefit? The benefit is that users want stuff that you do not want. So it kind of works like an anti-malware solution in a way. So I think that's something, if it's about the infrastructure, that could work over here.
It's a pretty easy implementation, too.
Yeah, definitely. And you can protect from installing software, running scripts, running executables. So this is all you would like to run when you want to attack somebody. And of course,
I think the management solution for AppLocker has to be way better before we can really use it.
I agree.
It's a splendid idea. It's the way it should be.
Yeah.
But it's not there yet. It's not easy to use.
It's the first time it's there, like improved from software restriction policy. So definitely it needs to get better, and it will, because it's a great
management,
idea.
Management, yes.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to a different area. You know, I had these questions written down, and I thought I'd hit a couple of them. One of you said that we should ask the question about human hacking. What does that mean? Yeah, any of you remember who asked me that question?
No? I think I did.
You did? Yeah, I think you did. So what does it mean?
It means that you use technology to actually influence the human's life. And when I was asking you that question, I was thinking about the real example when hackers got to the website for people with epilepsy, and the website was blinking when they enter it. And that's like kind of funny, but when you are real, it's not that funny, right? So this is what I mean by human hacking. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is happening right now, like Stuxnet and so on. Why we were attacking, well, they were attacking centrifuges. Mm-hmm. What was the point? Of course, to destroy something and also the human lives. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer funny to blink something on the screen, hide documents, and so on. Now we are moving to the era of attacking actually humans.
Well, actually, if we just continue some comments about the Stuxnet. Stuxnet actually continued to begin killing people. The people who were in charge of the whole program in Iran, they started just dying one after the other in different type of accidents. Shortly after the Stuxnet was discovered.
Always started by a motorcycle with somebody with a black helmet. Strange accidents.
I mentioned trolling earlier. We had a case in the UK, quite sad case actually, last year. A young girl, she was getting cyberbullied so much to a point that she threw herself under a train, and then the trolling started. So it was at a funeral, you know, trolls come online, and they were bombarding her family with just horrific messages. Mm-hmm. And so much so that it really changed the law in the UK, and now Facebook, as I said earlier, have now come online, and they're now starting prosecuting all of these people. So if you participate in this type of attack or this type of endeavor, your days are numbered, basically.
What I would like to add is that we are no longer that vulnerable to these things that are happening in the world. Like, whenever somebody's crying, it's not touching anymore. So if you think about the fantastic target for this kind of human attack, what would you think about? Like a real-time operating system in a hospital that is controlling human lives. It's awesome target. It causes so much damage. Mm-hmm. And this is what you need, a damage. This is why Stuxnet was for and so on, right? So that's maybe going to be the next, target. I don't know.
Also, Twitter.
Watch what you say on Twitter.
Watch what you say on Twitter. A number of people have been prosecuted on things like that.
Yes.
So war of the words to war of the,
the action.
Exactly.
Malware.
Marcus?
I think to continue down that road, I do some work with a company in Tampa, actually. It's a fairly large vendor of military equipment. And they are, I'm not saying they're changing their business, but they are expanding immensely in providing cyber ranges. A cyber range is a platform where you educate cyber soldiers in how to perform cyber warfare, defensive and offensive. And that is a large marketplace coming together right now. And governments are investing so much more money than you would ever imagine, because they realize that this is the future of warfare. This is the new territorial boundary where you need to protect yourself. I mean, the US, for example, I cannot say they because that's all of you. I'm Swedish, by the way. We do have a house in Tampa, too. But anyhow. So I'm like a little bit of a wannabe American. But, I mean, I watch American movies, and I'm not the only one in Europe doing that, eating your hamburgers all your nice country. But anyhow, I enjoy it, that's to you. But that's not what I was talking about. I mean, in the States, they have actually announced they have a new territorial boundary. I mean, it's official. I mean, you don't protect air, land, sea, and aerospace, you also protect cyberspace. So it's an intentional strategy to start building an army. Germany is the only other country in the world that also announced it. But everybody is doing it. And those are the people building the Stuxnet, the Flamer, all the other malware that is out there. And everybody is doing it. And that is a major risk. And I don't think we can stop it, but we need to realize that that is a change in the world that we have to somehow start to think about, start to talk about, start to maybe perform some actions or start to decide how we should react to that. Because that will affect us in the end. And that will start killing people. Because those are the ones eventually, maybe not today, but 10 or 50 years from now, will kill people in hospitals using those that technology. That's not going to happen tomorrow. If it happens tomorrow, it's a very, very nasty prank. But it's going to happen in the near future, and that's going to be an act of war.
And also, just one more thing. You know, social networking platforms, you know, we're giving our lives away on these platforms. You're giving all the details about who you are, where you live, your friends, your schooling, all your education. That could easily be turned around to be something a lot more sinister.
All right, so question down the middle here.
I have a question. More back to the, jailbreaking. Now, is it a valid concern that for a jailbroken device, there's a potential that it could inadvertently or, you know, purposely get infected with a virus? So, because they're just going to some random site, they don't know where they're installing from, they just got a link. So it can get something where it's like a keyboard logging or screen scraping. And is that a valid concern? And if so, I know there's a lot of movement around app-level security, you know, like good for email, things like that. Is that really protecting against that?
Yeah, why not just turn on the camera?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of whether jailbreaking is good or bad, I mean, for the continuous operation of that device, it's definitely the bad. You don't have any control anymore about what applications are possible to be running on that one. You're actually exposing your device to other type of vulnerabilities by downloading non-authorized software and installing that software on that device. So you're just opening it up all wide, allowing basically everybody who has an interest of pushing something to that device will be able to do that.
Is it worth saving the few extra dollars? Mm-hmm.
My question is more around that as a corporation, and we have bring your own device. Oh. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't have control over those devices. They may be doing it, even if I'm having an app where, I'm not putting data locally on it, I'm streaming it to it. Mm-hmm. They could have something where it's more just, you know, it's doing screen scraping collecting the data anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have no way to even know about it or control it.
Or actually intercepting the traffic, because a jailbreak device is basically like an open PC all of a sudden. You're breaking the model of sandboxing altogether. You don't have any proper sandboxing technology anymore.
But that's kind of funny when you think about it. When you jailbreak it, it becomes as bad as a regular PC. I mean, we have to put things in perspective. I mean, you're allowing somebody you don't know to run exploits on your device. I mean, that's a problem per se. But yes, the effect of jailbreaking is opening up the way every PC is open. So it doesn't necessarily have to be bad if it's done in a controlled way. I'm not saying I would recommend it, because you will break all kinds of support and everything, and I would not want my employees to do that. So I'm on your side, but I'm just saying.
It's a problem. All right. No questions out there? Oh, yes, please.
I'm just going to walk around to the other one.
Oh, that's all right. I'll come to you if not. I guess go around.
How do you deal with users that are basically VIPs who want to do things their own way? So like, I work for an organization where we have active sync policies for everybody except the president, who doesn't want to type in a PIN. How do you deal with that person over which you have, like, no actual control?
Usually these people are the best to attack.
Say again?
Usually these people are the best to attack whenever you are doing the penetration test because all the security policies are just wrong. But if it's about dealing with this kind of users, it's, I would say, more the human problem rather than technology problem. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of awareness. We're sometimes organizing the trainings just for the management to tell them what are, things are good and what things are wrong to make them more aware. Of course, they would like to have a nice Apple device in their pocket, but it's more about awareness.
So let me extend that question just a little bit further. Maybe you can give us an example of a social engineering attack that you're aware of that was really well done. Maybe you did it yourself.
Yeah, yes.
And what did you do then to defend against it?
I've done it, actually.
All right, so tell us about your best exploit.
It wasn't the best exploit, but it's something that covers your question. Actually, two things. First of all, it was so simple, but we were sending to people inside the network an update for Adobe Reader in the email, and management were the only people that could install it, and we got the message. So this was kind of testing the way how we tested out. And because they like to install their own applications and so on, they need to be a local admins, which is of course totally wrong. So this is how we made it. And the second thing was, even if you have a BitLocker machine, the key, the 38 digit easy to remember key, needs to be divided by 11. So you can add, for example, 38 zeros and it's gonna work. So the second thing was to send them a script that they're gonna run. Maybe, I don't know, in Adobe Update or something like this. And then they click it, they add to their repository the 38 digits zeros key for the BitLocker, and then you can steal the computer and get access to the encrypted laptop of the CEO of the company. So this is the second
idea. Oh, that's a good one. Marcus?
I will address your question. Like, what should you do? I think you should just come up with a nice piece of paper and make them sign it and tell them, of course you can do whatever you want to, you're the CEO, but you will have to take responsibility for it because I cannot do that for you. So it's totally okay for you to be in compliant as long as you take the responsibilities yourself. So this is a release, sign it please.
And also, if
and that will make them think.
Also if he connects his machine to the corporate network as well.
Yeah.
Because that's gonna have a, especially if he takes his machine home.
And it should say like, I hereby understand the consequences of this action, that it can this and this and this and this and that can happen, signed by me. Mm-hmm.
So basically tie legal into it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they pay you rent. What can you do?
Anybody else on this? So come on, exploits. So social engineering exploits. All of you have probably experienced or participated in that, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Marcus?
Hassan would never do that. He's too honest. I can lie and I can admit that now.
I mean, my one is the classic ID fraud one that I did a couple of years ago at TechEd. I am John Davidson.
You did what? I'm sorry?
I'm John Davidson.
You're John Davidson, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did an identity fraud project for the UK government, and I got a passport, credit card, complete history, and I'm John Davidson.
We'll just leave it there because it's being recorded.
Where's Andy?
Sorry?
Where's Andy then?
Oh, Andy's here.
Okay.
John Davidson's long gone.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So social engineering may be also useful in a project. And we had a project that was pretty sad, and I felt afterwards really bad inside. And the project was about kicking off an admin from the infrastructure. Because he was one of these people that, you know, infrastructure was his child, like raised from the beginning, and he loved it, and anything that was happening, he knew it, it's his, and so on. So that's like terribly wrong situation from the, and this was actually a bank, from the banking perspective. So the infrastructure was badly managed, was insecure, we've proved it, and the thing was to make a friendship with him from Monday to Friday. Yeah. So that he could give away all the accesses, all everything, just we wanted to help him to make his infrastructure secure. Of course he wants this. And we're like, oh, that's so cool that you were doing this, you were such a smart person, and so on. And on Monday, he he was kicked off. And we knew all the stuff that we should actually protect. So it may be useful in some of the projects, of course.
Oh, so, of course, you just charmed him into it, right, Paul?
Just say, guys, remember the last time that you were in that bar and that absolutely gorgeous woman came up to you and said, hello, honey.
Yeah. Yeah,
Marcus walks up to the bar.
You should lower your voice a little bit.
Yeah.
The alternative is Marcus walks into a bar and says, hey, how are ya?
No, Marcus just says, hey, do you want a free thumb drive?
Well, I think the key here is if you want to get a hold of somebody's system or data, just play with the human relationship peers in between. You will get very much long further than anybody else using any technical things. Yeah.
Marcus? I have done this for years. I mean, walk into buildings and stuff as part of penetration testing. I mean, there are so many tricks you can do that are so easy. I mean, the easiest one for me is I walk in with everybody else. I'm always on the phone. If somebody addresses me, I'm going to be pretty aggressive, like, this is my boss speaking. So, and they will just leave me be. And I have been walking after people through this small sluices where there should only be one guy, and they're like, oh man, this big guy is behind me, and even I usually pick some small woman, I don't know why. Because I know I'm gonna win. It's just a physical thing. I mean, and I can choose either to be very nice to them, but that's more risky because then maybe they, if they're trained or something, they will actually address me. But
try to
usually
serve me.
Another thing that is more funny, I mean, that I have a Facebook account, a guy called Evan Hilton.
Yeah.
And I use that account just for presentations, because I used to do a lot of presentation on social networking and stuff, security.
I got Susanna Boss.
Yeah, and I mean, he has a couple of hundred friends. He's way more popular than I will ever be, even though it's my photo on it. I mean, for reasons like he's got this super job, he's a super model, he's everything that I'm not. So he gets invited to all the parties. Whenever he's got birthday, everybody's, oh, Evan, I wish I could be there with you. I mean, everybody loves that guy. I mean, he talks about his parties and his Porsches and everything, and everybody wants to be his friend.
But can I be your friend?
Mine or his. But
no, I don't want to be your friend.
Either way, I mean, you're always welcome to be my friend. But the thing is that before conferences, if I'm going to speak to a company about social networking, Evan Hilton will contact them, and he will actually be a new employee in the management of that company. So I address them, I search them on Facebook, I address them like, I'm just starting next week, and I want to get some background on things, and I start to interact with them, and I mean, I'm like in management, so they appreciate that, they're flattered. So they start to talk to me and give me, I mean, that's really funny when you're in the conference later, and you're my friend on Facebook, I recall you. I mean, do you recognize me at all? I mean, I'm not that rich, but it's still me, you know. So, I mean, that's interesting. And that's one of the things with social networking. You never know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
We should become friends with Susanna.
Yeah.
All right, so along that same line, we'll kind of keep moving along. This is, it's ironic that when we built out the questions originally, it was almost, 4 months ago? At the time, hacktivism was becoming really big. Now, it's interesting to think that we don't see a lot about it. Any comments about it? So what happened?
Yeah, let me give you the example from Poland. We are not that polite like the rest of the Europe. And one of the situations, you were actually going in a train, and there are people checking for tickets. So if you don't have a ticket, you get angry. And of course, many people just do not buy a ticket. They obey the rules, and with a chance that you're not going to be caught, and so on. So the situation happened, and this was pretty sad, because the people that wanted to control the tickets asked the group of the guys, and they didn't like the fact that they're actually wanting the ticket. So they started to kick them, because, you know, you're checking for my ticket. You're the stupid one. I don't want a ticket. What's the point? Yes, and they started to kick them. And people were like, ha ha ha, because nobody wants to have a ticket, right? It's funny. And this is, I think, a good reference for the hacktivism. And if it's about me, I'm not afraid to say it. I'm like totally against. I don't want to live in such a world whenever we are against things that are just right. Of course, not always, but in vast majority, I think world is pretty structured, and hacktivism is kind of, I don't know, creating like a fake proof that we're not living in a perfect world? I don't agree with this.
Andy, I think you actually gave me this question. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I remember a movie years ago, the book George Orwell's 1984, remember that book? Big Brother is watching us. We are living in that time now. So again, there's a fine line between are we going to stand by and watch government control us, or are we going to stand up for ourselves and become Robin Hood hackers? But the problem is, standing up for ourselves has kind of gone a bit twisted. Mm. And it's they've actually turned the dark side, you know, they've gone to the dark side, or it's been badly influenced. So potentially what started as a good idea has unfortunately gone the wrong way.
Mm. You see?
Yeah, it's going to go.
I mean, I think there are good ideas about being on the opposite side. We don't agree with this and that, but being one individual among thousands or hundreds of thousands other individuals doing whatever, denial of service attacks or anything related to that, you are pretty much of an anonymous. You're not known by yourself. It's a group acting somewhere, somehow. It's a lot easier to do that than going out on the streets and demonstrating for something. Then you're showing who you are. You're doing that on the internet, or you're doing that on forums or social networks or wherever it is. Nobody actually knows who is doing that. So it's much easier. That's why I think people tend to be more compatible with it nowadays than it was before.
I mean, I think if you want to change the world, use your vote. Use your vote.
Marcus?
I just think that hacktivism is a reflection of... I mean, everything that's happening on the internet is just a reflection on the world in general. Mm. I mean, there are some different aspects, like you are more anonymous, that's correct. But I mean, there are activists out there today, and they're doing things that are good or bad depending on how you look at it or who you are and what your opinions are. I just think we need to understand and realize that this is going to be around forever from now on. It's a new world. And the reason is it might be a little bit lower right now on the radar than it used to be a year ago. It's maybe because the questions aren't that hot right now or whatever. So it will come back. And it is good and bad, depending on how you look at it. I mean, sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes people are doing it for the wrong reasons, according to you, me, the law, the governments, whatever. But it's here to stay. We need to start understanding that and see, or look at it as a way of the world.
If maybe, it doesn't go too far.
I was going to say, maybe because there's less of them, it's because the government's employing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, so where has Anonymous gone?
They want to be hired.
They went anonymous.
They went anonymous.
they got hired, or did they actually hang up their hats?
They graduated.
I mean, being a part of Anonymous, I mean, everybody in this room could be anonymous mm-hmm. tomorrow. You don't have to agree with the ideas of Anonymous. You can drive your own idea. I mean, all you need to do is download the photos and put them somewhere and tell people in an anonymous fashion that you are a part of the Anonymous. If it's more trendy to be a part of Lulzsec, you can choose that instead. So I don't know what happened to Anonymous. Maybe just brand name isn't as popular as Lulzsec anymore. Mm-hmm. And maybe there will come a new name tomorrow. But it's the same people. It's people who believe that this is the way for them to get their voice heard or some action done. That's it. And me and Hassan and some people in the team were brought into this stock. I mean, it's they are managing the, how do you say it? The stock market?
Yeah,
stockbroker. Yeah, stockbroker. That's the word. I'm Swedish. Remember, I don't have the words. They don't come to me as fast as I want to sometimes. They're a stockbroker, and one day, they had pictures of Anonymous on their desktops. Mm. I mean, that was a big incident for them, because they didn't know what happened. And I'm not going to go further explaining more, because that is confidential. But it could have been one disgruntled employee that had some access that just put it on the desktop to annoy them. Or it could be something else, because anybody can be a part of Anonymous. Mm. That's what I'm trying to say.
Somebody said that to me yesterday, a disgruntled... I said, I've never met a gruntled employee.
All right, so we have 5 minutes left, and I said that the audience needs to have something to walk away with. So what's the one piece of information they should walk away from Andy?
For me, I would say reassess how much information you actually have as your digital footprint and potentially reduce it.
Reduce it. Okay. Reduce your digital footprint. That's one thing.
Be careful about your digital identity, both on social networks and on your enterprise. Wonderful things are happening in our platforms today. The next coming version of Windows platform is actually giving us enormous possibilities to have to deal with digital identities in a much better way, pushing who we are, what we are doing to all different type of services. So look for that and try to control that in a better way.
All right, so your digital identity.
Know exactly how Windows works and what it does. So play with tools, and if you feel like that's like a huge topic, just start from the one detail, and you're going to dig, and you're going to discover fantastic things. It will create definite passion. So use the tools as much as you can, have your own testing environment, and know exactly what Windows is doing inside, because when we do have threats and we are fighting with them, we need to know what to do.
Know your operating system.
I think that the most important thing you can do security-wise is look around you, look what's going on, look what's happening, and try to adjust to it from a security standpoint. The advice I will give you today might not be valid tomorrow. The world is changing ever and ever. I did give different advice 10 years ago than I do today. We were talking about hardening separation of roles and stuff. Today it's about exploitation, dependencies, stuff like that. So, I mean, look at mobile devices, mobile platform, look at that, and think for yourself. I mean, I work in enterprise security. I don't work in consumer security. I care about that because I have a wife and kids, and the end users are part of the enterprise solutions, of course. But when it comes to enterprise security, I know many of you work in that area, I think it's very important to understand that your environments today are not fit to handle the security issues of today and tomorrow. And there are two ways you can fight that. One way is fighting Firestorm and try to change some things, like increase the strength of the password, start patching your systems more. The best way, I know most of you can't afford it from the perspective you have, is start making a blueprint of what a good secure network design is, and see if you can slowly start migrating into it. It will not look like your network. It won't. Whatever you come up with, it will look different. But start thinking about what you really want from a security perspective and see if you can start moving in the right direction.
And with all the cloud movements of the cloud and bring your own device, this is a great opportunity to do it.
Marcus, I think that was definitely more than one thing. That was a lot of things.
No, I have one more important thing is actually to attend my session, mine and Hassan's session, right after this one.
All right, thank you, everybody.